Welcome to this teleseminar on time management. My job is to show you how you can dramatically increase your effectiveness and increase your income and increase your time off as well. So let's begin with a basic introduction. One of the most important principles is that time management is really life management. It's not managing time so you can produce more gadgets and widgets and make more money. It's really managing your life. And so that's why Peter Drucker says you can't manage time, you can only manage yourself. The second point, the quality of your time management determines the quality of your life. You can look at every single aspect of your life and realize that how well you use your time really determines how happy you are, how effective you are, how successful you are. When I was a young man, I began studying time management, and I used to think that time management was like a planet, and my life was the sun, and time management went around my life like a planet in orbit, and every so often it was important, and then it went away, and then it was important again, and then I realized I had it wrong, that time management is the sun, and every part of my life are the planets that go in orbit around it. When I realized that, everything that happens to do with time management. And if I can get the sun right, all the planets would be in their orbit. And your sun, your time, is your life. And the planets are your family, your relationships, your income, the amount of money you make, how long you live, how much you exercise, and so on. Now, here's the good news, is that time management is a skill that can be learned, and it must be learned. Anybody can learn the skill of good time management. Just like you can ride a bicycle or drive a car, you can learn the skill of good time management. And my job is to show you how to learn the skill. Now, how do we learn a skill? What we do is we pick one element of time management that you think that can help you the most, and then what you do is you concentrate on learning that skill. Don't try to change everything at once. Just pick one thing and say, what one change could I make that would make a difference? And here's the good news. When you focus in, focal point, on a single skill, you will start to get better in all other areas of time management at the same time. However, if you try to do several skills at once, you'll end up getting better in nothing. So here's the situation in your life today. Rule number one is you have too much to do and too little time. The average person is working at about 110% of capacity. If you're on this call, you're probably working at about 120 to 130% of capacity. You're like a person on a broken production line that's overwhelmed. You can't stop it. It's like that I Love Lucy cartoon or segment where they were working on the candy production line and they just kept coming down the line and they kept stuffing them in their jacket and trying to eat them and everything else. Well, that's what your situation is. And every time you turn around, you get more stuff. Every day you get 5, 10, 20, 30 pieces of mail. The phone continues to ring. So the second point is that your workload and your responsibilities continue to increase. This is the natural tendency of adult life, is as you become better at what you do, you attract more opportunities to do it. You actually take on more responsibilities. And here's the interesting thing, is you are a very responsible person. So you don't turn away the responsibilities. You say, well, okay, I'll do that, and okay, I'll do that as well. And one more thing, and that too. And pretty soon, you're like a person trying to carry a whole lot of groceries out of the grocery store without a bag. And your arms are full and you keep dropping things. But here's the final principle, is that you'll never get caught up. I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but you will never get caught up. You're never going to get everything done. No matter how good you are, no matter how hard you work, no matter how early you get up in the morning, how many weekends you work, you'll never get caught up. So here's the rule. You can only get on top of your time to the degree to which you stop doing things. You've got to stop doing things of low value and start doing things of greater value. Now, here's some more good news, is only 20% of the things you do account for most of the value of what you do. So if you doubled the amount of time you spent on the 20% of tasks, you'd end up producing about twice as much. And if you eliminated the 80% of tasks that contribute very little, you'd still have much more time off and you'd be in control of your life. And we'll talk about these things and how we can do it as we go along. Now, goals are the starting point of time management. And with regard to goals, you always start with your values. You always start with your core. And you ask this question, what is really important to you in life? What is really important to you in life? Is it your health? Is it your family? Is it your future? identify the most important things to you in your whole life and be very clear about those. And be clear in your family life, be clear in your health life, your business life, your career, and so on. And here's the rule. You can always tell your true values by what you do. Whenever you are under pressure and you have to choose, your true values come out. Many people think that their values are what they want them to be, or what they wish, or what they hope, or what they intend, or what they write, or even what they explain clearly to other people. But the fact of the matter is, your values are only what you do. Your values are always expressed in your actions, and especially when you have to choose to do one thing or another. A person says, well, my family's more important than anything else. And then the boss says, you've got to get this job done by tonight. And so you cancel your son's soccer game and your dinner with your wife to do the work. And so what you're saying really is, my work is more important than my family. Some of the most successful people I've met, by the way, are people who will not compromise their family responsibilities for work. And they're absolutely clear about it. And what happens is, you know what, the boss says, okay. And he gives the job to someone else. People say, well, I might lose my job. If you lose your job because you won't compromise your family, it's not a job you want to keep in the first place. So start with your values. And remember this, the value of anything in your life is determined by how much time you invest in it. You can tell what's important to you by the amount of your time, which is the amount of your life that you invest in it. People say, well, golf's not important, but I play it 3 or 4 times a week. Or socializing with my friends is not important, but I go out 2 hours every night after work and socialize with them. Or television isn't important, but I watch it 5 hours a day. Be careful. Your time tells you and the world what's really important to you. Interestingly enough, by the way, if you change the way you use your time, you actually shift your values. You can actually become a better person, a better human being, by simply doing the things that a better human being would do with their time. So here's the second principle in goal setting. Imagine that you learned today that you only had 6 months left to live. How would you spend your time? Now think about that. Imagine that your doctor said, I've got good news for you and bad news. The good news is that you're going to live for 180 days. For the next 6 months, you're going to have the most fabulous health in your entire life. The bad news is, at the end of 6 months, you're going to drop stone dead from an incurable illness. So, if you only had 6 months left to live, how would you spend your time? Now, I don't know what you would say, but I can assure you that you wouldn't say, I'd want to get back to the office and return a few phone calls. Because when you only have a short time left to live, the only thing you think about is what you truly value. And almost invariably, you will think about another person or persons, members of your family. So, your answers to the question, if you only had 6 months left to live, tell you what you really value in life. That is the very best way of being perfectly honest with yourself. You notice an interesting thing that if a person makes a deathbed confession, it's entered in court. If a person says on their deathbed their last words, this is what happened, that is considered final proof, because nobody ever is wrong about their values on their deathbed. They always tell the truth on their deathbed. So ask yourself this question regularly. What would I do if I only had 6 months left to live? And use it as a go-forward question. Look at your life when you're overwhelmed with things and say, what if I found I had an incurable illness? What would I do differently from today? Now, here's another question that you need to ask, and you have your pencil and paper handy. So the question is, what would you do first if you won $1 million tax-free today? Say they called you up and said, you know that contest you entered in 6 months ago when you were on vacation? Well, you just won $1 million cash, and it's tax-free, and it will be sent to your bank account or anywhere that you choose. What would be the first thing that you would think of doing if you had $1 million? Now, the purpose of this question is to jog your mind a bit, because what it really asks you is, what would you do with your life if you were free to choose? If you felt that you were free, that you had enough money so that you wouldn't have to worry about money, that you wouldn't have to worry about failure or rejection or anybody or anything else, is ask the question, if you were free to choose, what would you really like to do? Here's a big challenge, because some people think, well, I'd quit my job immediately if I won $1 million. You know what that means? That means that you're in danger of wasting your life. Because if you would quit your job, if you won a lot of money, it means that you're at the wrong job. So, and if you leave your relationship, it means you're in the wrong relationship. You know, you heard the story of the a woman comes home at night and she says to her husband, she said, honey, I won $1 million in the lottery today. Pack your bags. And he says, hey, that's great. Where are we going? We're going to the ocean? We're going to the mountains? She said, I don't care where you're going. Pack your bags. So when you win a lot of money or even think about winning a lot of money, it clears your mind about who you are and what you really want. And here's the good news. Whatever you would write as an answer to this question, if you won $1 million, it's possible for you. The very act that you could think about it and write it down means that you can achieve it sooner or later. Now, you can't achieve it overnight, but if you really want it long enough and hard enough, you can accomplish it. The fact that you could write it down means that you have within you right now probably the talents, abilities, knowledge, and resources to make it a reality. Okay, here's an exercise for you, and this is the one you have to write down, so get your pen in hand, and here it is. What are your three most important goals in life right now? You have 30 seconds to write the answer, so write quickly. What are your three most important goals in life right now? Please begin. If you can't think of anything, write money, money, money. 20 seconds left. Write quickly. Seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, stop. Now, this is called the quick list exercise, and those of you who've been through my coaching program are familiar with it. You can use this, by the way, and you can use all these questions for the rest of your life. You can use them with other people in your world. You can use them with your friends. But if you only have 30 seconds to answer this question, your answers will be as accurate as if you had 30 minutes or 3 hours. Because when you're forced to think of what your most important goals are, they seem to pop to the surface of your mind like balls that you've held underwater. And here's what we have also found, is that your three goals will almost always be one financial, one relationship, and one health. In 80% of cases or more, those will be your three goals. Why? Because your financial life, your relationship life, and your health are the three major areas of your life. Now, here's what we know about this exercise. Whatever you wrote is an indication of the life, of the direction that your life is moving in right now. Because what you wrote indicates where you're headed for. Also, if I were to ask you, what are your three biggest problems or worries in life right now? You would find that your three goals are the solutions to your three problems. So, your three problems are where you're coming from. Your three goals are the direction in which you're heading. You can ask anybody this question, and you can ask yourself this question on a regular basis, and it will instantly give you a snapshot of where you are in life. Here's another great question for goal setting. What have you always wanted to do, but been afraid to attempt? What have you always wanted to do, but you've been afraid to attempt it? Have you always wanted to start your own business, take a trip, get married, get divorced, change cities, move somewhere else, take additional courses, upgrade your skills and abilities, knowledge, and so on? What have you always wanted to do but been afraid to accomplish? And whatever it is, it's possible for you. Your job is simply to write it down. Remember this, the biggest single obstacles to success in life are the fear of failure and the fear of rejection. Whenever you think of something that you want to do, what holds you back from going for it is always the fear of failure. What if it doesn't work? What if I don't achieve it? What if I lose my money? What if I lose my time? The reason why we fear failure, by the way, is because most people don't realize that success is built on a foundation of failures. The greatest successes in the world have always been the greatest failures as well. They've been men and women who've been willing to fail over and over again. Now, here's a formula, by the way, that's really great. When Thomas Edison was asked about his philosophy of failure, what he said was this. He said that, I believe that once I have started working on a goal, I believe that it's only a matter of elimination before I find the way that it will work. So therefore, I look upon every failure as a successful step that eliminates one more way that won't work. Now, if you're on this teleconference, you have probably used the Edison method many times, and there's probably lots and lots and lots of things that you have tried to do that haven't worked. And what you do is you just simply ask, what have I learned from each of these failures that has made me smarter and stronger? But whatever you've been afraid to do, remember, if anyone else has done it, you can do it as well. If anyone else has started where you're starting and achieved the goal that you've always been afraid to attempt, then it's possible for you. The only thing that holds you back is your own imagination and your own resolve. Now, here's a great question. It's a psychological question. What sort of work or personal activities give you your greatest feeling of importance? What makes you feel the happiest when you do it? To put it another way, what is it that you really love to do? What is it that you really love to do? What gives you your peak experiences? What makes you really, really happy when you're doing it? You feel just elated. Your endorphins are released. You're full of energy. You just love it. And all your life, you've enjoyed doing it. For myself, for example, I love to read. I love to read. I love to learn. I love to explain what I'm reading and learning to other people. The good news is that I've found a career where I am able to do what I love to do. Marcia Sinatra, a writer, once wrote a wonderful book, said, "Do what you love, the money will follow. Do what you love, the money will follow." Today, there's 100,000 different jobs that you can do in our society, and your responsibility is to keep asking, what is it that I really love to do, and then how could I find a way to do it and make a good living? How could I find a way to do it and make a good living? So here's a sub-question. If you could only do one thing all day long, what would it be? Take a look at your current work and say, if I could only do one thing all day long, what would I love to do? What would be the most important thing for me to do? What would be the most valuable thing for me to do if I could only do one thing all day long? And then you ask, how could I structure my life so that that's what I'm doing most of the time? And if you can find a way to do it, you'll be absolutely amazed. It can double your income. It can dramatically improve your life. It can fill you full of satisfaction and happiness. And it's one of the best of all time management tools is to get better and better doing those few things that you enjoy the most and which pay you the highest. Okay, here's the final great question in goal setting. What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If you could wave a magic wand and you could do, be, have anything you want in life, what one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If you are guaranteed of success in any goal, short or long term, big or small, what goal would you pick for yourself? Now, whatever your answer is, this becomes your major definite purpose. For many people, it's a financial goal. If you could achieve a certain level of financial wealth or well-being, you could solve all your other problems. For some people, it's a relationship goal. Some people, it's a health goal. But whatever it is, you make this your major definite purpose. And this is what you think about most of the time. This is what you think about when you get up. And this is what you think about throughout the day. And this is what you visualize and imagine. Because here's the good news. Whatever goal you set as an answer to this, what one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail, this goal is achievable for you if you want it badly enough and you want it long enough and hard enough. The very fact that you could clarify it and define it means that it's possible for you. Well, many people ask the question, how do you set goals? And as you know, I have a series of different methods of goal setting. I even do strategic planning for corporations. Well, we will spend 2 full days doing goal setting, which is another word for strategy, for the corporation and for every level of the business. But here's a simple goal-setting exercise that you can use. It has 7 steps. You can use it for the rest of your life. Step number 1 is to decide exactly what you want. This will separate you from about 90% of the population, because only about 10% of people know what they really want. And these people accomplish far more than everybody else. The second part of the exercise, number 2, is to write it down. Only 3% of adults have written goals. And when you take out a piece of paper and you write down your goals, you move into the top 3%. Because remember, you are not what you wish or hope or intend. You are only what you do. And if you do what the top 3% of people do, you move into the top 3%. Number 3, set a deadline. And it's very important that you have a deadline. It's like driving a spike into the goal to lock it into your subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind uses a deadline as a forcing system. Your subconscious mind loves deadlines. Now, people say, well, what if you don't achieve it by the deadline? Then you set a new deadline. But remember, there are no unrealistic goals, only unrealistic deadlines. So set a deadline, and if you find that you need to change it, sometimes you'll need to move it up, and sometimes you'll need to move it back. But just revise it as you get better information. Now, step number four is to make a list of everything that you'll have to do to achieve the goal. Make a list of everything that you can possibly think of. The more you can break a major goal down into small baby steps, the easier it is for you to take the first baby step and the easier it is for you to achieve the goal. The reason why people don't accomplish big goals is because they remain big goals. But remember, you can build a huge wall of brick if you do it one brick at a time. And that's your job. So you keep breaking it down. My friend John DeMartini has a wonderful exercise. He said, write down seven steps that you will need to take to achieve your goal, and then write down seven steps you'll need to take to achieve each of those steps. And you'll end up with one goal and 49 steps. He said, and then just take the first step. And it's a real great way to think about your goals. Keep breaking them down into smaller and smaller steps. Now, step five is to organize your list of goals or steps by sequence and by priority. By sequence, you mean you ask, what should I do first and what needs to be done after that? And priority is what is more important and what is less important. And then with your list of activities organized by sequence and priority, you make a plan. And a plan is a series of steps in a row. And once you have the plan, you start on item number one and just do item number one. People say, well, this is an enormous goal. I want to make $1 million and retire financially independent. And what you do is you take the first step. The first step is actually writing it down as a goal and writing down a list of everything you'll have to do to achieve it and then organizing the list. And that is a major step that puts you into the top 1 or 2% of adults alive today. Now, step number six is to take action on your list. Do at least one thing on your list and do it immediately. The faster you take action, the more likely it is you'll take action on other things. And number seven, and this is the kicker that makes the difference, is do something every day on your major goal, whatever it is. Every single day, make a deal with yourself to do one thing. Even if it's just to review the goal, or to read one paragraph in a book, or to take one step, or to make one phone call, then make a decision to keep the plate spinning by doing something every single day. And by doing this, you develop a secret power of success called the momentum principle. The momentum principle says that it takes a lot of energy to get moving toward a goal, but it takes very little energy to keep moving once you get started, once you start in motion. So your job is to get going and then just keep going. And you find it's very easy to do one little thing a day, and surprise, surprise, a week, a month, a year from now, you'll look up and you'll be astonished. I have friends who are best-selling authors who wrote one page a day. They got up in the morning, sat down and wrote a single page. By the end of the year, they'd written a complete book. By the end of the next year, the book had been published, and they were best-seling authors, and it transformed their lives one page at a time. Okay, let's talk about doubling your productivity. Now, doubling your productivity is very systematic. It's sort of like cooking with a recipe. You know, there are some chefs that can take and go into the kitchen and whip together an absolutely beautiful dish very quickly and efficiently, and there are other people who can have the finest cooking equipment and the finest ingredients, and what they produce tastes awful. Well, there is a system for doubling your productivity, like using a recipe. And once you have the system, you dramatically increase your time management. Number one is to make a list of everything you have to do every day. Every single day before you begin work, make a list before you start. The best time is to write out your list the night before. Write it out before you go to bed. Write it out at the end of the day and move your jobs from this day forward to the next list so that when you turn out the lights and go home, your mind is clear because your whole next day is planned. Rule is never work without a list. If something new comes up, put it on the list. You get an idea to make a phone call, put it on the list. The wonderful thing about making a list is this, is that when you make a list and you check things off through the day, it gives you a tremendous feeling of accomplishment. It makes you feel like a winner. It makes you feel happy. It releases endorphins in your brain and gives you energy and creativity. But if you are working without a list, it's almost like a drunk lurching from pole to pole. You never know where you are. You never know what you've accomplished, and you have no track record. So always work with a list. And here's what this time management experts have found, is that you'll increase your productivity by 25% the very first day you start working from a list. You'll just jump your productivity. You'll save yourself 2 hours of hard work every day. 25% of 8 hours is 2 hours, just simply by working with a list. Okay, number two, to double your productivity, apply the 80-20 rule to your list. Now, the 80-20 rule, as we said before, says that 80% of the value of everything you do comes from 20% of your activities. So what you do is you say, what are the 20% of my activities that account for 80% of the value of everything I do? By the way, some days it'll be the 10-90 rule. 10% of what you do, one item on your list, will be more important than all the others. And that's always the item that we have a tendency to put off. So what you need to do is you need to practice creative procrastination. Creative procrastination says you're going to have to procrastinate anyway because you can't get everything done. So therefore, procrastinate consciously and deliberately on the 80% of activities that contribute little value to what you do so that you have more time to do the few things that really make a difference in your life.
The third key to doubling your productivity is to consider the consequences and your ability to consider consequences and determine consequences accurately from what you do or don't do is one of the most important thinking skills in life. In this context, you use what we call the ABCDE method, which is based on considering consequences. An A task is something that you must do. There are serious consequences for doing it or not doing it. In other words, making a sales call, getting a contract out, getting back to a customer, doing what your boss wants, and so on. The A tasks are the most important. You take your list of activities and you write an A next to every task that you must do today or in the near future. The B tasks are tasks that you should do. Now, these are not as important as A tasks. These have mild consequences. And you put a B next to everything that you should get to when you get a chance. A C task is a thing that is nice to do, but it has no consequences. Get another cup of coffee, talking to your co-worker, seeing what's in the newspaper. These are nice things to do, but they have no consequences. Now, here's the problem. Is fully 50% of working time is spent doing C tasks, things that are nice to do, but are fun and easy and completely irrelevant and contribute nothing. If all you did is you disciplined yourself to stop doing C tasks and do B and A tasks, you could double your productivity. And here's the rule. Never do a B task when there's an A task left undone. Now, if you have several A tasks, you go down and you say, what is my A1 task? What is the most important of all my tasks? And you put an A1 next to that. And that's the task that you start on, and that's the task that you work on all day long until you get it done. And here's what we've discovered. Even if you don't get your A1 finished, you'll know every minute of the day that you could be doing nothing more valuable than this task. And developing the habit of working on your A1 task will do more to double your productivity and double your income than any other habit you can develop. Now, a D task is something that you delegate. And the rule is you delegate everything you possibly can so you can free up your time to do the few things that only you can do. Now, in our coaching program, we teach what we call the hourly rate approach to work. Ask yourself, what is my hourly rate? And let us say you're earning $100,000 a year, and that means you work about 2,000 hours a year. It means your hourly rate is $50 an hour. That means you never do anything that does not pay $50 an hour. You do not make photocopies or make new coffee or pick up your own newspapers or mow your own lawn. You don't do things that pay $5 an hour if you want to earn $50 an hour. What you do is you delegate, outsource, downsize, do everything possible to get people who work at a lower hourly rate than you to do it so you can do more of the things that only you can do at your hourly rate. And the E in the ABCDE formula is to eliminate. And eliminate all low-value, no-value activities. Just like as you grow through life, you buy a lot of clothes and your closets eventually get stuffed and you have to go through them eventually and throw out all those old clothes that you're never going to wear again. The the same thing with your task. You have to look at all the little things that you've accumulated that you do on a regular basis, and you have to start drawing a line through them, stroking them out of your life, because the only way you can get control of your life is by stopping doing little unimportant things so you have more time to do the things that count. Now, this brings us to the fourth key to doubling your productivity, and it's called zero-based thinking. And this is one of the best thinking tools in the whole world. Basically, what it says is you ask yourself, is there anything that I'm doing today that, knowing what I now know, I wouldn't get into again today if I had to do it over? Keep applying this. We say, draw a line under your past and say, is there anything I'm doing today, knowing what I now know, that I wouldn't start again today? Now, there's three areas where this applies. The first has to do with your relationships. Are there any relationships, personal or business, that knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into? Many companies look at all of their customers and say, do we have any customers that, knowing what we now know, we wouldn't have sold to in the first place? And they're finding that they have a lot of customers that are no longer suitable for them. Sometimes we call these people customers from hell, but often they're customers that buy very little, that complain a lot, that are hard to service, and so on. So you can dramatically improve your operations by simply stopping serving these customers. In your personal life, is there anyone in your personal life that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get involved with? If the answer is yes, then the next question is, how do you get out and how fast? The second area of zero-based thinking has to do with any of your business activities. Look at your products and services. Are there any products or services that you're offering that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't bring to the marketplace? Are there any methods of doing business that you wouldn't start up again? Are there any processes or procedures or ways of marketing or selling or promotion that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start again because they're not working? If there are, the question is, how do you get out and how fast? And then the next key is investments. What investments of time, money, or emotion have you made in the past, in relationships, in financial investments, in activities, that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start up again? I've had many people take this question and resign from clubs and associations that were taking up a lot of their time. They resigned from social activities that were taking time away from their family. They've resigned from business clubs and organizations that were taking time away from their children. So keep asking yourself, do you have any investments? And remember this, many of your investments in the past are what are called sunk investments. A sunk investment is an investment that's gone forever. In other words, you'll never get it back. For instance, a bad relationship that didn't work out. Not a good place to invest any more emotion. It's gone forever. A bad investment in money. It went down. The company went broke. You lost your money. Don't worry about it. Think about it anymore. Walk away, and so on. Okay, now, the fifth key to doubling your productivity is to divide up your work by urgent and important into four quadrants. Now, if you can imagine a box with four numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, top left-hand, top right-hand, 1, 2, bottom left-hand, bottom right-hand, 3, 4, then divide these boxes up by urgent and important. The first box, box number 1, are things that are urgent and important. These are things that you have to do. They're in your face. These are things that are imposed upon you by your work and demands of other people and phone ringing and your boss and quotas that need to be met and everything else. So most people spend most of their time working in quadrant 1, activities that are both urgent and important. Now, next to that is quadrant 2. These are activities that are important, but they're not urgent. These are activities that could have a major effect on your life if you do them and do them well, but they're easy to procrastinate because they're not due yet. If ever you took university courses, you'll find that everybody puts off their major papers until the night before they have to be in, or they'll lose the whole course. Sometimes we procrastinate on our most important tasks until the very last minute, because every task that is important but not urgent, at a certain point will move into the urgent box and be incredibly urgent, be something you've got to get done if you want to save your work or your career. This is called the quadrant of effectiveness. The more things you do, upgrading your skills, exercising, spending time with your family, planning, goal setting, being on teleconferences like this, these are not urgent, but they are important because of the long-term consequences or potential consequences for your life. Now, the third box are activities that are urgent, but they're not important. phone rings, a coworker comes in, somebody calls you, you get an idea to call somebody or do something. These are urgent because they're right there, but they're not important because they don't contribute to your most important goals. And finally, there's the last quadrant. This, by the way, is called the quadrant, things that are urgent but not important. This is the quadrant of delusion. This is where, because you're at work, you think, well, this is part of work, but in reality, it contributes nothing. So you are practicing self-delusion when you work in this area. The last quadrant is the quadrant is where things are neither urgent nor important. This is called the quadrant of waste, and it is amazing how many people spend time in the quadrant of waste. They come in late, they take long coffee breaks, they read the newspaper, they sit around and chat with friends, they phone home to see what's for dinner, they stop off and see what's for sale, they leave early, and so on. These are all ways of wasting their time. So here's the key to success. Spend more and more time in quadrants 1 and 2, things that are urgent and important, and things that are important but not yet urgent, and less time in quadrants 3 and 4, the quadrant of delusion and the quadrant of waste. Here are 4 questions that you can ask continually to keep yourself focused on your most important tasks. Number 1 is, why am I on the payroll? Why are you on the payroll? In other words, what do they pay you for? If your child were to say, Mommy, Daddy, why did they pay you money at that place? And you had to ask and describe your jobs in terms of the results you get for which they pay you money, what would you say? The second question is, what are my highest value activities? What are the things that I do at work that contribute the greatest value of all the things I do? I had a woman in my coaching course, wonderful woman, and she stood up and she told this story to the whole group. I said, I'll show you how to double your income and double your time off. She said she heard that and she took the whole day of coaching. She went away, but she really was skeptical. She didn't believe it was possible. In the second program, she stood up and she said, I have to tell you what happened. I went back to my office, and Brian said that I could double my productivity and double my income and double my time off. So what I did is I made a list of everything that I had to do, and I worked out about 16 different things I did in the course of a day. I've been working for this company for 8 years. I was working 10 or 12 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week, and I just didn't see how it was possible to double my income and double my time off. So then I looked at this list, and I said, what's the most valuable thing I do on this list? And I put a circle around that. I said, what's the second most valuable thing? I put a circle around that. What's the third most valuable thing? And I came up with the 3 things out of the 16 that I did that were the highest value activities. So then Brian told me, go to your boss and say, boss, I want to do these 3 things all day long, and I want your help to delegate and outsource everything else. And if I do, I think I can double and triple my productivity. Would you pay me twice as much? She said, I went into my boss at 10 o'clock on Monday morning, and he looked at the list, and he looked at me, and he said, okay, any other questions? She was shocked. She walked out, and he helped her, and she delegated, outsourced, downsized, eliminated, got rid of everything else except those 3 tasks, and she just did those 3 tasks all day long. She said within 90 days, she doubled her productivity, doubled her income. She was working 5 days a week, coming in at regular hours, leaving at 5 o'clock. She'd never been happier in her whole life. Does it work? Yes, it does. Remember, there's only 3 things you do. So it's a perverse law of 3. There's only 3 things you do that account for 90% or more of all the value of all the things you do. And your job is to get better and better doing more and more of those 3 things. Now, here's a great question. What can I and only I do that, if done well, will make a real difference? Ask yourself this question every hour. What can you and only you do that, if done well, will make a real difference? Now, here's the point. If you don't do it, nobody else will do it. But if you do it, and you do it well, it can make a significant contribution to the quality of your life. Question is, what is it? And the final of the 4 questions is this. What is the most valuable use of my time right now? Of all the things you have to do, every minute, every hour, keep asking, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? What is the most valuable use of my time right now? And whatever your answer is to that question, do that, and only that, and stay with it until it's complete. Now, here's the 7th key to managing your time and doubling your productivity, and it's single-minded concentration, Over the years, I've studied success, and I've found hundreds of principles that are helpful to success. But I've only found one that is absolutely essential, and it is the principle of focus and concentration. If you can focus on your most valuable task and be absolutely clear about what it is, and concentrate single-mindedly on that one task until it's done, you can conquer the world. You can accomplish any goal. You can overcome any obstacle. You can become rich and wealthy and successful and happy and live a long life. And there are many reasons for it. So the key is this, is make a decision today that you're going to develop the habit, over time, of concentrating single-mindedly on one thing, the most important thing, and staying at it until it's 100% complete. Now, once you've asked the questions, what is the most important and urgent thing I have to do, and what's the most important? Why am I on the payroll? What are my highest value activities? What can I and only I do, which if done well will make a real difference? And what is the most valuable use of my time right now? Every single exercise and question in time management brings you to this point where you can identify with pinpoint accuracy the most valuable thing that you can do this moment. And then all the work in self-discipline and character development is aimed at bringing yourself to the point where you can just darn well do it. Now, here's what we know. Is single handling on your most important task saves as much as 80% of the time required to do the task. Now, why is this? Well, time management experts have found that if you start a task and do part of it and then go away and come back, you have to review where you were, figure out where you left off, you have to refresh your memory, you have to get organized again, and then you have to get started. If you then put it aside and come back to it again, keeping on doing this is the most amazing thing. It takes up 500% of the amount of time necessary to do a task if you started and stayed with it and completed it, if you keep coming back to it. So that's the first reason why you want to concentrate single-mindedly. It dramatically reduces the amount of time necessary to do a major task. I have a good friend, a woman, who I'm very impressed with. She's written more than 40 books. And she told me that she writes every one of her books in a 4 to 7 day period. She gathers research, gathers information over weeks and months and so on, gets it all ready, and then she goes through an exercise and a diet and sleep routine and gets herself all revved up and ready to go, and then she sits down and she blasts out a 200 or 300 page book in 3, 4, 5 days of writing. I thought that was absolutely amazing. So I thought, you know, that sounds like a neat technique. So I started doing it myself. And it's absolutely amazing, is I can get all organized, and I can sit down, and I can take maybe months and years to do the preparation. But once I sit down, I never stop, and it may take 2 or 3 days, hour after hour after hour, and I can blast out a 200 or 300 page book outline. It still has to be edited and polished and everything else, but it's absolutely amazing. And now I'm publishing 4 or 5 books a year. There's some people don't publish one book in a lifetime. I publish 4 or 5 books a year, and as you know, they're all really good books. They're really detailed, they're really different from each other because of this principle of single-minded concentration. Now, here's some more good news. Concentrated, focused work is a source of energy and enthusiasm. Is the more you concentrate on an important task, the more energy you get, and you feel happier, you feel yourself moving and making progress. And then closure and completion, finishing the task, raises your self-esteem. It releases endorphins in your brain. It makes you feel happy, and it motivates you into the next task. It's almost like it gives you a rocket power when you take a major task and discipline yourself to stay at it until you're done. By the way, if ever you force yourself to stay up late at night and it's 12 or 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and you finish the task, you're going to be so revved up you won't be able to sleep for 2 or 3 hours. Even if you are exhausted right up to the moment of completion, you'll feel fabulous. So the most important thing you can do in life is set clear goals and set priorities on your goals, is set clear priorities on your tasks, pick the most important thing, and do that and only that until it's complete. And what it does is it revs you up and drives you into the next task. It gives you energy. It even strengthens your immune system and makes you immune to colds and flus and other things. It causes you to sleep less and wake up with more energy in the morning. Now, there's a bugaboo in time management, which you're all familiar with, and it's called procrastination. So how do we overcome procrastination? And I've worked out a series of 10 things that you can do to chip away at procrastination. Number one is set clear goals and make written plans of action. Number one reason that people procrastinate is that their goals are in the air rather than on paper. So write them down, make plans, make lists of steps you can take, and then take the first step. Number two is break your goals down into bite-sized activities. In other words, make them small, like little bricks for a brick wall, and then just put one brick in place. Take one step at a time. Don't worry about doing lots of things. Now, step number three is select one single task that will help you achieve your goal and start on it immediately. Even if it's a little thing, just select it and start on it. It's absolutely amazing, you know, that once you start, you seem to have an inner motivation to continue. It's just getting started in the first place. And you get started by picking a small part of the task and going after it. Now, number four, Swiss cheese your tasks. You know, Swiss cheese has a lot of holes punched in it. What you do is you punch a hole in the job, and you just pick one little piece, and you do that to get started. And if you Swiss cheese, you know, good Swiss cheese has a lot of holes in it, you just punch a lot of holes. You can walk around the task, and you just pick one small part, and you punch a hole, you grab that, and do that. And sometimes that's enough to get your engine started, like with a lawnmower engine. You get the engine started, and pretty soon you are motivated into the next one. Or you can, number five, salami slice a major job. Salami slice, you know, you never try to eat a whole salami at once. You take it one slice at a time. So what you do is you slice off one clear, clean piece of the job and do just that. You say, I'm only going to do one piece, and then I'm going to go and do something else. But if you agree with yourself you're only going to do one piece, like writing one page of a book or making one call in prospecting, you feel a little bit motivated to maybe do one more piece and so on. Number six is 20-80 the task as opposed to 80-20. Sometimes the first 20% of a job is worth 80% of the whole job. Sometimes the 20% where you take it and lay it out and design it and plan it and do one thing or make one call is 80% of it. Do you know that getting the appointment with the prospect is often 80% of the sale? So it's that first 20% of picking up the phone, going through, speaking to people, making sure they're qualified, and getting the face-to-face appointment is 80% of the whole job. Just doing that kicks you into business. And once you have the appointment, if you're in sales, once you have the appointment, everything seems to flow from that. So number seven, set a time limit. Say to yourself, this is a big job, so I'm going to work on it for 15 minutes, and then I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to try to do a whole thing. I'm just going to do 15 minutes worth. You can even set an egg timer, if you like, that goes click, tick, 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 and work for 15 minutes. What this does is it gets you started and often keeps you started. Okay, number eight way to overcome procrastination is to set up a reward structure. A reward structure is you give yourself a reward for completing part of a job. For example, what you do is you say, okay, I have to make 10 calls today on prospects, so I'm going to put a cup of coffee in front of me, and I'm going to give myself a sip every time I get a contact with a prospect. Or you can say, I'm going to make 10 calls every day, and I'm going to give myself a cup of coffee after every 10 calls. I'm going to allow myself to go out for lunch after 20 calls. And what you do is you hold the calls out as a reward. Another thing you can do is if you like cookies, you can take a cookie and break it up and say, I'm going to give myself one bite of cookie every time I make a call. And then what happens is you get unconsciously, subconsciously motivated to get the cookie or to get the sip of coffee, especially before it gets cold. And you stop thinking about the rejection and you stop thinking about the problems on the phone. You start thinking about the cookie that's sitting right in front of you. Maybe you like chocolate, so you get yourself some Hershey Kisses. Maybe you give yourself one Hershey Kiss for every three calls. In other words, you train yourself the way you'd train a dog or a horse. You give yourself a little reward structure, and it's absolutely amazing. You say to your wife, we're going to go out for dinner as soon as I make two sales. We're going to take a weekend off as soon as I make five sales. And you set yourself a series of rewards, and those rewards tend to motivate you day and night to overcome procrastination. Now, number nine, promise others. Promise other people that you will do something by a certain time. You go and look them in the eye and say, I promise you I will have this done by noon on Thursday. We are very, very sensitive to the fact that we've promised somebody something. And if we promise somebody we'll do it, our boss, a coworker, even our spouse or a friend, if we promise somebody we'll do it, we become internally motivated to get it done. And finally, number 10, look at your list of tasks, select your most important task, and then imagine that you were suddenly called out of town for a month, and you could only do one job on your list. If you could only do one job on your list before you were called out of town for a month, what one job would you do? And look at that and say, imagine the phone call is going to come any minute, and I'm going to have to leave town, and then go after that job like a dog chases a passing car. Just jump on it. Well, as we come to the end of time management, there are 7 R's of superior performance. And the first of the 7 R's is resistance. Whenever you experience resistance, whenever you're having difficulty in your work, it's not working, you're frustrated, you're unhappy, what you do is you stand back and instead of forcing it, you stop and analyze and ask why. When I was working on cars as a young man, we used to say, never force it, just use a bigger hammer. Well, it's the same thing in life. Sometimes when we're not succeeding, we actually force things, whether it's relationships or work, and we get frustrated and angry. But the smartest thing of all is to stand back and say, could there be a better way? So number 2 is to reevaluate your situation. Whenever you experience resistance, number 2 is reevaluate and ask yourself 3 questions. First question is, what am I trying to do here? What am I really trying to accomplish? Second question is, how am I trying to do it? Is this the best way? And the third question is always, could there be a better way to achieve the most important goals to me than what I'm doing right now? And ask other people. The third R for superior performance is reorganization. And you must be continually reorganizing your work and your schedule so you're doing more and more of the most important things. Don't get locked into or fall in love with a particular work routine. Be prepared to reorganize. Number 4 is restructuring. Restructuring means spend more of your time on the 20% of activities that contribute most of the value of what you do, and less and less of your time on the others. Restructuring keeps moving your time forward, so you're doing more and more of those high payoff tasks. Now, the fifth is reengineering. Reengineering means continually simplify the work process. Continually look for ways to do it faster and easier. So make a list of every step in a work process. For instance, the first step is making the phone call, getting the appointment, seeing the prospect, putting together the proposal. Make a list of all the steps. And then set it as a goal to reduce the number of steps. Make a list of the steps and then go through and say, how could I reduce the number of steps? The second in reengineering is delegate all low-value tasks to other people. I was speaking to a saleswoman the other day. She's got 3 assistants. Who do every single part of the job except direct face-to-face interaction with the customer. Why? It's because that's the highest payoff use of her time. So what she does is she downsizes, outsources, delegates, and gets everybody else to do those other tasks of phoning, confirming, and everything else. Now, outsource all non-essential, non-profit-making activities, and finally, eliminate every low-value, no-value task possible in reengineering. Number 6 R is reinventing. That means think about starting over at something completely different. This doesn't mean that you need to, but you should always hold in the back of your mind, what if I was to change careers completely? What if my career or my job or my company disappeared overnight and I had to start over again in the workplace of today? Apply zero-based thinking to your field. Imagine drawing a line under the past and saying, is there anything that I'm doing that if I wasn't doing it today, I wouldn't start again? Sometimes people ask that question, and the answers they get are very revealing. Imagine that your job or your company disappeared overnight, as many jobs and companies do. Look at the dot-com, dot-bomb explosion, where hundreds of thousands of very talented people were suddenly unemployed and had to find completely other things to do. The third is think about what you really love to do in reinventing yourself. Many people who lose their jobs find, you know, I've lost my job. I think now I'm going to do what I really, really love to do. And they go out and find a way to make a good living doing it. Now, the 2 biggest time wasters in life, by the way, are not unexpected phone calls and interruptions. The 2 biggest time wasters in life are, number 1, staying in the wrong job, and number 2, staying in the wrong relationship. Many people waste years of their time in the wrong job. they're never really happy with it. They're never really successful. They never really make a lot of money, but they stay at it because they're comfortable instead of doing something that they really love to do where they have a chance to excel. And the second is many people stay in the wrong relationship because they become comfortable with it, and years go past, and then it's over, and those years are gone forever. So be really hard on yourself. If you're experiencing resistance in your work or difficulties or resistance in your relationship, say, is this the right place for me to be? And say, if I was starting my life over again today, what would I do differently? And finally, the last R, the seventh R, is regaining control. And the way you regain control of your life is you accept 100% responsibility for everything you are and for everything that happens to you. You refuse to make excuses or to blame anyone else. If there's anything in your life that you're not happy with, you say, I am responsible, and you get on with changing it. As Benjamin Disraeli once said, never complain, never explain. If you don't like what's going on, do something about it, but don't blame other people. Okay, here's seven secrets to getting more done. Are you ready? We're getting to the end here. The seven secrets are, number one is work faster. Pick up the pace. Develop a sense of urgency. Develop a bias for action. Get going. Get moving faster. It's amazing how slow people are. I was reading an interview of people who had visited the United States from Europe, and they went back and they said, you know, they sure like the U.S. as a place to visit, but people work too fast there. They really like the idea of working slowly, you know, getting to the job when you feel like it, getting the job when you get around to it, and so on. But you just move faster. Just pick up the pace. Move quicker. You'll be amazed at how much more you'll get done by moving faster. Number two is to work harder. Work longer hours. Start a little earlier, work a little harder, stay a little later, but work longer hours, and it's amazing how much more you'll get done. Here's the rule, by the way. If you're going to work longer hours, work all the time you work. Don't waste time. Don't chat with your coworkers. Don't drop off your laundry or pick up your dry cleaning. Work all the time you work. Make every minute count. Number three is work together. Work with other people on big tasks. Cooperate with other people. Get them to help you. Delegate parts of the task so you can get big jobs done by getting several people involved. Number four is simplify the work. Eliminate steps. Strip out the complexities. Reduce the number of steps necessary to get a job done. A seventh secret to getting more done is do things you're better at. Make fewer mistakes. The more you do things you're better at, the more of them you'll do, the fewer mistakes you'll make, the more that you'll get done. And delegate and outsource everything else. Number six is to bunch your tasks. Now, this is one of the greatest of all time management techniques, is to do similar tasks all together. In other words, do all of your prospecting together. Do all of your calling on customers together. Do all of your letters and proposals together. Do all of your expense accounts reporting together. It's called using the learning curve. And what we have found is that when you do a whole series of tasks together, each subsequent task takes a little bit less, even though the task size is the same. And after you've done about 10 tasks, it's taken you about 20% of the time that it took you to do the first task. People often ask me, how is it that I can get through all my correspondence, all my emails, all of my letters, all of my projects? It's because what I do is I do them all at once. And I sit there and I will punch over my dictaphone and my pad of paper and I'll just do them all at once and I'll go through 20, 30, 40, 50 letters, correspondence, proposals, articles, and things like that. And people are amazed that they get that much done. But it's why it's taking me less and less time every single time I do it. And each time I complete something, it gives me more energy, which drives me into doing the next one, which gives me more energy and so on. And you can do the same. Now, here's one of the best time management techniques of all. It's to get better at your key tasks. Get better at the most important things you do. Get better at the two or three things you do that account for most of your income. One of the great rules of success is this: all business skills are learnable. If you can ride a bicycle, if you can use a cell phone, if you can type with a typewriter, then you can learn any business skill. Many people say, well, I'm not very good on the telephone, or I'm not very good at prospecting, or I'm not very good at closing. Well, get over it. The fact is that every single person who is good at it today at one time could not do it at all. Every person who's in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. All business skills are learnable, and you can learn any business skill you need to learn to be excellent at what you do. And the way you do it is you just start off and just keep working at it a little bit every day. Keep the plate spinning, and surprise, surprise, a week, a month, a year from now, if you get a little bit better every day, you will be a master in your field. You can learn to be a superb time manager, just as you can learn to be excellent at anything else. And here is the insight. You could be only one time management skill away from doubling your income. You could be only one business skill away from doubling your income. And you know something? You probably already know what it is. So here's the summary. Number one, decide exactly what you want and write it down. Number two, set a deadline and make a plan to accomplish it. Number three, decide what you will have to do and make a list. Number four, organize your list and set priorities on your tasks using the ABCDE method. Number five, start immediately on your most important task. Number six, work steadily, nonstop, until your most important task is 100% complete. And number seven, never give up. Keep reminding yourself that failure is not an option. Thank you for being on this call.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.